Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier and it's my pleasure to be with you. Well, I'll be with you for 2 hours and then, of course, between 2 and 3, being the first Wednesday of the month, we have Council Connections in here. So Michael and the crew will be in to tell you what's going on. Between 1 and 2, I've got our private investigator will be in to talk about all things that he's been working on and other bits and pieces. But it's my pleasure to introduce Saskia. Now, Saskia is from a group. Well, it's her group. She started, and it's called Forever Friends. Now, they go around to the pounds and that, with some of these animals could be ready to get euthanated, and she brings them down here and she gives them loving homes, and then hopefully with a lot of them, she puts them up for adoption. So, first of all, welcome, Saskia.
Thank you for having me back, Alan.
Not a problem. Now, Saskia, there are a few things that I wanted to talk to you about. The first one is we know that there's been a lot of work done around people giving animals for Christmas, cats and dogs, and everybody loves a fluffy little kitten and I guess a little pup, but sometimes when they start to get big, they no longer want them, and particularly if they've been given to someone who doesn't necessarily want an animal, but they were given as a Christmas present. Now, I know a lot of work has been done in the papers and that, and we've done a bit here asking people not to do it. Has it started to get through, or are you still finding that, you know, around February, March, that a lot of animals are winding up down the pound?
We actually find most dumpings of animals, particularly dogs, tends to happen from the 6 months and up age group. So I think, you know, a lot of people do buy for themselves a puppy as well as perhaps as a gift, and just do not have, are not prepared mentally for how challenging it can be to have this small, pretty demanding little creature in your house that needs a lot of company, socialisation, exercise.
And if you haven't, if you aren't the one who's made up your mind that you want it, if someone's given it to you,
it's more likely to go pear-shaped because that person hasn't prepared themselves in any way, shape or form. So, yeah, it's definitely something we don't want people to be doing. You've got to go in eyes wide open.
But just going back one step, have you found that there has been a decrease in the numbers over the last 2 or 3 years, or is it still about the same?
I think it's about the same, and it's also what has also muddied the waters is a huge number of surrenders and dumpings post-COVID. So post lockdowns, we saw so many dogs, particularly 6 months and up, dumped after people went back to work.
Yeah, so people got them as a bit of a companion or a distraction, and then just decided it's all too hard.
All too hard. The dog had grown bigger than they expected. They hadn't researched the breed. So really tragic because a lot of these dogs had done nothing wrong. They'd just grown.
Yeah. And I know somebody who got a particular dog and thought it was going to be a family dog, and it turns out it's a working dog. So, yeah. I mean, that's another problem too, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a beautiful Maremma surrendered to a pound recently.
Uh-huh.
A Maremma, an Italian sheepdog, surrendered to a pound we worked with recently. And the surrendered reason on the form they wrote was got bigger than we expected. But if you just do a quick Google search on the breed Maremma, you know, you can find out they grow pretty big and they're not meant for the suburbs. So it's just really frustrating that people don't just take even 5 minutes of their time to check out what they're taking on.
Saskia, you've just brought up a point that I hadn't thought of. I mean, the dogs we've had have either been bitches or they're I call them Mitsubishis, but what do they call them? Mitsuis and that? And some of them sort of a mixture. How many sort of dogs from overseas, like you're talking about overseas there, do we have a whole lot of variety of dogs from overseas?
Yeah, there's lots of breeds in Australia who originate from overseas. They would have been bred here.
Right.
But Maremmas, for example, I think first came over in the 1960s and have become increasingly popular here. But they are also a huge dumping problem at the moment. Having done this rescue work for 15 years, I did not see a single Maremma in need until 4 years ago. So that's 11 years without a single Maremma. been dumped that so, we were asked to help, and now we are flooded with inquiries to help that particular breed.
So were people a bit more savvy, like they did a bit more work prior to the last few years, or there weren't as many around, or why all of a sudden the big increase?
Why indeed? I'm afraid I do need to blame Victorian film industry. They released a film called Oddball in about 2020.
That.
Yeah, Oddball, and it was hugely successful, and it was about a Maremma sheepdog who was looking after penguins at Warrnambool, and then all these backyard breeders jumped on the bandwagon to cash in on selling these cute little white fluffy puppies who grew into big, big dogs. So since that movie, the problem arose. So
right. All right, just take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
You order a drink, it goes down smooth. Before you can blink, it turned into two. It was just gonna be another night with the boys, shooting some pool, picking a stool and making some noise. Then she walks in, and I never danced, turns a tip in the band, and taking her hand, oh man, it happens like that. Out of the blue sky, lost in her blue eyes. Yeah, when it happens like that, nothing to lose, turns right into you. Doing all you can do just to keep her around till the moon goes down and you're back at your house. One thing leads to another, you loving each other when looking, you never look back. It happens like that. It happens like that. I guess that's what you get. It's true what they say. As soon as you stop looking, it's right in front of your face. Cause there you were, and there I was, and here we are. I tell you what, true love, it happens like that. Out of the blue sky, lost in her blue eyes. Yeah, when it happens like that, nothing to lose, turns right into you. Do it all you can do just to keep her around till the moon goes down and you're back at your house. One thing leads to another, you loving each other when looking, you never look back. It happens like that. Wonder how just one drink turns into one knee down with a diamond ring. It happens like that. Out of the blue sky, lost in her blue eyes. Yeah, when it happens like that, nothing to lose, turns right into you. Do it all you can do just to keep her around till the moon goes down and you're back at your house. One thing leads to another, you're loving each other when looking, you never look back. It happens like that. You order a drink, it goes down smooth. Before you can blink, it turns into two.
I'm talking to Saskia from Forever Friends. Saskia, you were mentioning that dog that was in that film about the penguins. Is there any other films that where dogs have been featured so much that people have gone out and started buying these dogs and then said, whoops, I shouldn't have bought them?
Yeah, I believe 101 Dalmatians was guilty of inspiring a lot of people to start breeding them irresponsibly and
they're
buying
a
them.
Big dog, aren't they?
Yeah, and they have a lot of need, exercise need, and they're not the easiest to train. So there was a lot of dumping of that particular breed in the years following that film. I believe Beverly Hills Chihuahua also. Yeah, I haven't seen it, but particularly in the US, it inspired a lot of backyard breeders to jump on ship with that one to make a quick buck. So, it's unfortunate that Hollywood's choices impact animal welfare, I'm afraid.
That's not good. Are you finding at the moment the economy's pretty tight? Now, maybe a lot of people aren't buying dogs because they can't afford them, But have you found a spike every time when the economy gets tough that people do in fact dump dogs?
Oh, absolutely. And it's going across all the species because we're an all-species rescue. We also, do our best for cats, kittens, horses, farm animals, chickens.
So people are even letting horses go, are they?
Yeah, horses are a big one that are suffering at the moment. Not only with people needing to surrender them, but people struggling to feed the ones they've got.
Yep.
So that's very disturbing, the cost of hay just going through the roof.
Yep.
We're actually more worried about how the next 6 to 12 months is going to play out for farm animals as well, because there's a lot of, hobby farmers and even, proper farmers who will really struggle to feed their stock.
Well, I know at Mortlake, I think it was the last week or the week before, now I've been to Mortlake for work on a number of occasions, they had the biggest amount of beef cattle. Now, I can't remember if it was beef cattle, it was just cattle, went through their stockyards in one day than ever in the history of Mortlake.
Wow.
But farmers just couldn't afford to keep them.
Yeah, that's proof positive. But yep. There's no doubt the cost of living crisis is impacting people and their pets. We're getting more and more surrender requests from people saying they just can't afford to keep their animal anymore.
You don't normally take surrenders, though, do you? Doesn't most of yours come through the pounds?
Yeah, we focus on pounds and shelters and the death row animals. Yeah, the ones that are absolutely running out of time, or the clock's just about stopped ticking for. So, but when we get the surrender request email, some of them are just, the stories are just so tragic that we do try and fit them in where we can to help keep those animals out of the pound and shelter system as well.
Because otherwise, if you don't take them there,
they're going to wind up there anyway. Yeah.
Saskia, I must say too that I follow you on Facebook, and one of the things I noticed, there was another group that was running out of funding. I don't know whether it was government funding or what. And I noticed you were sort of fairly vocal about, and I just don't remember the name of the group because I only follow your group. And I believe they've had their funding reinstated, haven't they?
Trying to remember which one that is, because most rescue groups don't get any government funding whatsoever. Yeah. So we're really, just keeping them off from the door every day of the week.
Yeah.
The shelters and pounds are luckier in that with a higher,
council usually fund.
They are funded by council contracts, for animal management, but they've also got, decades and decades on top of the average charity like mine of reach in the community. So, the RSPCA, for example, is often
donations. Most of these council pounds do have a finite time, don't they? They'll only keep an animal so long and then they generally euthanate. If they haven't been able to get rid of them, then they euthanate them, don't they?
Yeah, particularly country pounds we find are the worst place for an animal to end up. Under the legislation, a stray animal only has to be held for 8 days to allow an owner to track them down, and on the 9th day they can legally be killed. And a lot of country pounds with unclaimed strays on the 9th day will either kill them or hopefully offer them to rescue groups like myself. They don't have an adoption program in many cases locally, which makes it a lot more difficult.
Country are worse. Why different country than what the city is?
I regret to say that some attitudes in country areas can still be quite backward towards animal welfare. So unclaimed strays in country areas, you'll often notice the council pound is next to the tip.
Yep.
So that gives us a bit of an indication of how the level of importance that animals can take in some areas of the country.
Yep.
And also just less funding. The city councils are much more, they get a lot more in rates from a lot of people. So the country councils, are more stretched financially.
All right. We've got to take a break and we'll come back with more.
know we've got to leave today. Just exactly where we're going, I cannot say, but we might even leave the USA. Cause it's a brand new game I wanna play.
Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. Where it's already 12:30. Can't believe how quick these hours go. But we'll have Saskia with us right through till 1 o'clock. And then, of course, after news and weather, we'll have our private investigator, Pete, to tell us what he's been up to. Saskia, I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm pretty certain the answer is going to be how long's a piece of string. But there's a lady over in Sydney, Maureen Eltner. She used to be a singer in the 60s, very well-known lady in the 1960s. I know a friend of hers on Facebook. And she's very much into animals being looked after and that. I don't know that she does any work with them. She's always posting things. And she's been posting a little bit lately about these dogs and that you're talking about that have been surrendered. A lot of them over cruelty, I must say. She's really much anti-cruelty, and I respect her for that. But if you get a dog in that's been badly treated, how long before you could rehome them? And I know you're going to say they're all different, but just a rough idea. And what do you do? So you've got a dog. She had one that was as skinny as nothing. It looks like he'd never been fed. His ribs are all hanging out. Eventually, whoever was looking after him fed him up and he looked real good. But when they took him home, he'd sit in a corner for months on end and they'd have to go over and try and pat him and he'd be all right, but he wouldn't come out. So how long would you expect, when you're looking after these dogs, to do that?
Yeah, it is very much case by case and depending on what the dog has endured. But one thing I do notice about working with traumatised and abused dogs is how incredibly resilient they often have been, and they are extraordinary for being still willing to trust humans. And sure, it takes us, you know, days, sometimes weeks, to gain the trust of a new dog that's come in.
Yep.
And we'd very much have to focus on healing both the body and the mind. It's very similar with humans who've been badly treated. So often it's the easiest thing to heal the body, the quickest, and our vets, you know, will assess the dog very quickly and make sure we do everything for their physical health. But, yeah, healing the mind does take longer, and we really grateful to work with some fantastic veterinary behaviourists at the RSPCA in particular, and they come on board and help give us what we call a behaviour modification plan. It often includes medication for the dog's anxiety and, you know, training exercises to, you know, gain trust. So that's the most rewarding part of the job, actually, you know, seeing a dog move from fear to trust, from sadness to joy. That's what gets me up in the morning.
Because dogs, and I've had dogs over the years, you can sometimes look at them and they look very sad, don't they?
Yeah, they feel every emotion just like you or I. Yeah. And by that same token, they also suffer deep trauma. And it's been more and more recognised by veterinary behaviourists that there is a high rate of mental illness in pets as well as the community. I think it's meant to be similar. About 25% of humans and 25% of pets will have mental health challenges as well.
I'm intrigued how... So these behaviourists that you're talking about, so they're obviously trained. So... I can't understand how somebody at some stage was able to put together a plan to work with animals like that, because the animal can't tell you, hey, I'm this or I'm that.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that.
Yeah, they can't speak our language, so we have to learn to speak their language, and that's what's fantastic about working with these highly trained vets and behaviourists. They've learnt what to look for. You know, what does a lip lick mean? And it's not just, you know, a dog carrying a corner isn't just the only way they'll tell us that they're fearful and stressed. There's lots of other physical ways they'll show us.
Now, I told you off air, and I don't want to repeat it on air, but I had a dog that we retrieved from the pound. This is a long, long while ago. But even years later, he'd been with us for 6 months and he was a lovely little dog and he was part of the family and he was treated better than the rest of us almost. Yeah. But, I mean, he was part of the family, and yet 6 months later I raised my arm to do something, to show my daughter something, and he cowered down and he shivered. Now, I don't believe in all the years we had him, he ever got rid of that. So obviously, would you say that someone's mistreated him? Because in every other way, he was a well-looked-after dog. Like, he'd been trained and all sorts of stuff, but he was really fearful. We had to ask people when they came, don't put your hand, hold your hand up.
Yeah, look, that would almost certainly be evidence of abuse. For a dog to drop to the floor and tremble like that, they're reliving a memory of... They're being triggered by you raising their hand. They're remembering. So, yeah, just horrible.
All right, we're going to take another quick break and we're going to be back with more.
I remember when we broke up the first time, saying this is it, I've had enough. Like, we hadn't seen each other in a month when you said you needed space. What? Then you come around again and say, baby, I miss you and I swear I'm gonna change. Trust me, remember how that lasted for a day? I say, I hate you, we break up, you call me, I love you. Ooh, 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 ooh. We called it off again last night, but ooh, 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 this time I'm telling you, I'm telling you, we are never getting back together. We are never, ever, ever getting back together. You go talk to your friends, talk to my friends, talk to me. But we are never, ever, ever, ever getting back together. Like, ever. I'm really gonna miss you picking fights, and me falling for it, screaming that I'm right. And you would hide away and find your peace of mind with some indie record that's much cooler than mine. Ooh, 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 you called me up again tonight, but ooh, 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 this time I'm telling you, I'm telling you, we are never, ever, ever getting back.
Like, ever.
No!
We are never, ever, ever getting back together. We are never, ever, ever getting back together. You go talk to your friends, talk to my friends.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and we're talking to Saskia from Forever Friends. First of all, you talked about these behavioural person that, or there are people around that as a profession. How do, what signs do they look for, or like if you or I were having an anxiety attack or whatever it might be, we'd go to whoever it is and say, oh, this is how we feel. Now, a dog and a cat, and I presume horses and everything are in the same, can't do that. So how do they know what the problem is? And more importantly, how do they know what to do something about it?
Oh, look, they're so incredibly well-trained, these veterinary behaviourists. They've trained as a vet, medical vet, and then they've done extra tertiary-level training in animal behaviour. And it's a really new and emerging area of study, and it's just fascinating to see how much more we're learning about animals and their minds and their psychology now compared to ever before. So, for example, a cat that pees outside its litter tray, like we think, God, that's annoying, and smelly and all the rest of it, that's a classic sign of stress in a cat.
Is it?
Yeah. So a lot of the behaviours that we get grumpy about with our animals, so-called misbehaving, can just be stress and anxiety.
Fair dinkum. I never would have known that. Now, you did mention along the line that with some of the dogs and cats, I presume when we're talking, well, I'm not sure about chickens, but a lot of these animals, they're all the same sort of problems that come up. So out of, say, the dogs and cats, how many percent would have to be on medication because of anxiety problems? Would it be a very low, say, 5%? I'm not actually trying to get a hard figure, but whether it's, say, 5% or 70%, whether it's a big life or a small.
Yeah. Well, the animals that come directly to our sanctuary at Gladysdale, we've got a rehabilitation kennels and a rehabilitation cattery. So the animals who are in our care under Forever Friends who are already in foster homes, they tend to be the ones that are much further along the line of rehabilitation, and they don't tend to be on medication so much, maybe 5% in the home. At the sanctuary, it's probably higher, maybe about 30%. But a lot of those animals, once they get adopted and are settled in a new home, the medication is weaned off under veterinary supervision. So once they're settled and they've got a stable and loving home, we can start to dial back the meds.
Well, I suppose it's a bit like humans, isn't it, really? I mean, if we're in a stable situation, got a stable job or people around you that
that
care for you or trust for you, and we run some community service announcement here about people who are in untrusting, you know, where they're frightened for their lives and things alike to that. So I guess in some ways it's a bit the same as the rest of us. We all want to be in a peaceful, I guess, loving situation. But I guess if you're not, whether you be a human. So would a horse and be the same? But what about things like chickens and that? Would they don't, or you can't, wouldn't know?
Depends on the circumstances they're living in. We certainly see, like in high industry situations, like chickens in, you know, battery farms and even overstocked free range farms, lots of stress behaviours.
Just flap around, run around everywhere.
And that's how they should be, But you often see, you know, self-harm in chickens who are in stressful situations. They'll pull out their own feathers because they're not coping.
So, and I don't want to encourage this with anyone, so they can self-harm the same as what a human sometimes does.
Yeah, to relieve stress. And we had a cat come in a couple of weeks ago to our clinic who was attacking her tail frequently, and we couldn't work out why, but the tail was a source of stress for her. She was she bit it right down to the bone. And so it was too late to save her tail. We had to amputate her tail. And now she's doing beautifully. So bit of a mystery, that one.
That brings another question to my mind, and you obviously, like you and your husband and all your volunteers, and you have a lot of volunteers up there working with you, but you also have a group of vets, don't you, that supply their time to you?
Yeah, a fantastic charity called Vets for Compassion, founded by Dr. Elaine Olne and Chris Barton, who are vets in inner Melbourne. They have formed a partnership with Forever Friends that we're so grateful for, and they send some incredibly talented vets and vet nurses to the sanctuary to help heal these animals' minds and bodies.
Do they?
Yeah, and amazing individuals. They do a lot of voluntary work in the community, particularly helping native wildlife, and also respond to disasters. So they're the first to attend bushfires and floods. And
are they?
A fantastic group. Yeah, do look them up, Vets for Compassion.
Vets for Compassion. We'll get people to have a look at that. I might even try and talk to one of them one day and see if they'd come and talk to us. That's something that very often, until you actually see a photo of it, when bushfires, everybody is worried about human life, and so we should, and they're worried about the houses and all that, but they very often don't think of the pets, not the pets, very often the wildlife that just perished, don't they? Because they just
That's
can't
correct.
Get away.
Yeah, the recent Grampian bushfires throughout you know January were just absolutely devastating for wildlife, and Vets for Compassion were on the ground a good 8-10 weeks searching for injured and burnt wildlife, because a lot of them simply just are suffering at the base of trees.
Yeah.
And the ones that haven't been badly burnt often are starving because all their food sources have been destroyed. So that was the other reason Vets for Compassion were there for many weeks, rescuing and helping feed the animals.
We might try and talk then.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to come back with more.
Change, the feeling is strange, it's coming right back in my ring.
talking to Saskia for Forever Friends. I hope you've got a bit of paper and pencil ready with you because, Saskia, I guess, and I know that you've got a lot of volunteers and nobody gets paid there, but when you start talking some of these animals, I mean, cats probably aren't as expensive, but dogs are, and then you start talking about horses and you're trying to keep them off death row as well, I guess it all costs money.
Goodness me, yes. I'm afraid life-saving doesn't come cheap, but yep. They're certainly worth the investment. Some of these animals, you know, go on to enrich the people's lives who adopt them in so many ways. So
how can people donate to Forever Friends? And I guess apart from the financial side of it, are you always looking for dog food, cat food, horse food? Well, hay at the moment is just terribly expensive. So are you looking for donations as well, or just financial so that you can buy the stuff?
Oh, look, every little bit helps when you're a volunteer-run charity like ours. But it is end of financial year in June, so this is a good time to put out a little bit of a plea that all donations to Forever Friends over $2 are tax-deductible.
It is tax-deductible?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you jump onto our website, Forever Friends, one word, foreverfriends.org.au, you can click on the donate button and get the details there. In terms of food and so on, we're always desperate for cat food and kitten food, wet food, dry food. Dog food, we are quite well, covered with donations.
Yep.
But cat and kitten food is something we struggle with, yeah.
And how do you go with horse food?
Horse food, again, so expensive. Yeah, yep. We always looking for donations of hay and pellets. Horses are so expensive to feed, I'm afraid.
What, like, if you bought a bale of hay today, and how many horses you got?
In care, yep. We've got 3 at the sanctuary and we've got several more in foster care. There's another 6 or 8 in foster care around the valley.
So the 3 you've got, say you bought a bale of hay, how long will that last?
Just one little square bale.
Yep.
Oh, an hour.
Is that all? Like,
they get stuck into it very quickly, yeah.
So, like, it's not going to last a day or anything?
No, I'm afraid not. We buy hay rounds at the moment. The rounds last a few days, thank goodness. But we paid $80 for a hay round last year and we've now just paid $200 for the same.
Saskia, why did they move from bales to round? I don't quite understand that.
Oh, they're more economical, the rounds. Yeah, it's like buying in bulk. Yeah.
So is it it's just the size, is it?
Normally, yeah. Sometimes the hay quality can be different too.
Yeah, because I can understand, like with the bales, you could stack them up and stack them beside and all that, whereas the round ones, there's a lot of space between each one, isn't there? So
that's correct. And you need a tractor to load and unload them. So rounds are, even though rounds are more economical, they're harder to store, they're harder to move.
Yep.
Yeah.
So when the industry went to the rounds, that is mainly just because of the, to make them bigger. They couldn't make the bales of hay bigger. Is that why they went to the rounds?
I think it's also easier to harvest in the paddock, with the machinery that you just roll the cut grass up.
Oh,
yeah.
Anyway, we're off the track a little bit, but I was just intrigued because I still spend a little bit of time in the country and you see a lot more rounds than what you see bales now.
Correct. It is more economical for farmers, but incredibly hard to get at the moment anywhere. We had our last rounds trucked down from Queensland last week.
Queensland?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, it's terrible. Though. And, of course, the poor old farmers, they're trying to pay this every day of the week, aren't
Correct.
They?
Correct. It's fairly scary.
Yeah, it's not good. Now, apart from we've talked about that you've got them in care, these animals, so at times, are you looking for more foster carers where you can park an animal for a month, 2 months, until you can find a forever home.
Absolutely. And we are desperate for foster carers, more so now than ever before, and particularly for cats and kittens as well as dogs. But we've got a lot of animals at the sanctuary who are ready to go to foster homes. Yep. They don't need to be at the rehab facility anymore, but... Yep. They simply have nowhere to go.
So is it only cats, kittens and dogs, or
pocket pets as well? We always
tell
looking
us
for
what
more.
The pocket pets
yeah,
are.
Yeah, pocket pets. So we also rescue rabbits, guinea pigs, mice, the odd ferret, and we need foster carers for them as well.
When you say you want foster carers for them, well, how long would you expect a foster carer to have those animals?
Our preference is if someone takes on a foster animal that they house them until they're adopted.
Yep.
And that can be anywhere from a few weeks to many months, depending on the breed and the age and the temperament of the animal.
Yep.
But we're also just inviting people to apply to be carers, even as respite carers for a weekend. You know, we've yep. got dogs at our kennels who would love just a weekend out of their pens, couple of nights, even
so
a couple of weeks.
So people could take them away for a couple of days and take them away from your place for a couple of days and then bring them back again.
Exactly. Just helps break up the many months that some of the dogs are there, and you know, we try and give them the best quality of life, but of course they get bored.
Yep.
So yeah, even just having a day's outing with a registered volunteer, you know, driving the car, it all helps.
Yeah. All right, so what did you, pardon me, so if someone wants to come along and be a foster carer for a day, week, month, or whatever, what do you require them to be? Like, do you need to have police checks done them, because you want to make sure that these animals are looked after? What sort of checks do you want the person to have?
Well, you get them to start just by filling out an application form on our website and get a snapshot of their lifestyle. You know, are they full-time workers or part-time? We don't require police checks. We do operate with a level of trust, but we do a yard check just to make sure your fences aren't falling down and there's no poisonous plants in the yard. And, yeah, we check each other out like that.
Oh, that's fair enough. All right, so... You're always looking for foster people. Also, you've got a Facebook page, which is Forever Friends.
Correct, Forever Friends Animal Rescue.
So if somebody is at home today and their poor old dog's passed away only in the last few weeks or something, and they're looking for another animal, I guess you're always up for adoption. So how do people find out what Forever Friends has at the moment for adoption, and what sort of checks do you make on those people too?
Yeah, if you jump on our website, foreverfriends.org.au, you can click on dogs, cats or other pets.
Yep.
And you can see what we have available, the lovely photos, dogs of all sizes, shape, cats of all sizes and age, and there's some horses up for adoption there and pocket pets too. And the other reason I wanted to circle back to fostering is that if you're thinking of having another pet in your life, like you have lost one recently, and you're not sure if you're ready for another 15-year commitment, jump on board as a foster carer. Dip your toe back in the water.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of a chance to try before you buy, to put it crudely.
Yep.
And if that foster pet is a good fit for you, you are allowed to apply to formalise it.
I was just going to ask you that.
Mm.
That was going to be my next question. Out of the percentage that go to foster home, now I realise that some of the foster people don't want a full-time pet. They're happy to have them for a while and hand them back. So I'm not. This is not in no way putting those foster carers down.
No, we need those people.
Mm. Yeah, and a lot of them will foster care, but they don't want. But out of those where they go to foster home, how often do you find where the person says, I don't want to give this pet back?
Look, it's quite often, and we affectionately call it foster failing, and that's when you just cannot bear to give that animal up because they've just become part of your heart and your home. So it probably happens 20 to 30% of the time. It's quite a high number.
Is it?
Yeah, and I've even foster failed, of course.
Have you?
Yes, too many times. You just fall in love and you can't let them go, and that's okay.
Righto. Just give us the contact details again, please, Saskia, and then unfortunately we've got to go.
www.foreverfriends.org.au.
And that you can look up there what they could do in the way of donations. They can place donations there, and I guess they can also see what's up for adoption.
Absolutely.
Thank you for your time, Saskia, and we look forward to talking to you again later in the year.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
No worries.